According to the global research firm YouGov, one of the top 10 resolutions for 2020 was to be more spiritual. And to illustrate that, they used an icon of a person meditating, not praying. All this week, we'll be taking a closer look at secular spirituality. It's not religion. We have deep respect for people's faiths, their choice of a personal God, and a set of agreed-upon tenets. But you can be religious and still yearn for more connection with the human spirit. And according to the Pew Research Center, more Americans now say they are SBNR, spiritual but not religious. Maybe you've seen that on dating sites. Then there are the nuns. When asked religious affiliation, they say none. There's a yearning for a deeper way to live and to interact with people we disagree with. In other words, for a way to be more like Krista Tippett.
I'm Krista Tippett, and this is On Being.
Krista is creator and host of Radio's On Being, which has become, as The New Yorker said, a full-blown, multi-armed cultural institution. The On Being Project, the Civil Conversation Project, people with opposing views speaking with Krista. There's also the People's Suppers, communities with opposing views dining together. We'll link you up at herenow.org. It's pretty amazing. And Krista launches our series today from her mothership in Minneapolis. Krista, so nice to speak with you.
Well, thank you.
And how would you describe spirituality?
To me, the root meaning when we speak about spirituality is interior life.
Last year, scientists at Yale and Columbia said that they located the spiritual part of the brain not necessarily activated by religion. There's a region of the brain you can see where people's religious feelings light up their brain. But they said you can also see spirituality. This is when people turn their attention to themselves or other people. Spiritual experience can be a feeling of communion with God, but it also can be a feeling of being one in nature, or when one embraces humanity, it can be as simple as being elated during sporting events. So,
which just also, again, points at how broad this is.
Right.
And I love the way you're framing this series that you're doing, because we are a culture that has for a while now really only rewarded and privileged exterior accomplishment. Not too long ago, just about everyone had some religious identity that they inherited, like they inherited their hometown and their hair color.
9 in 10 Americans.
9 in 10. And that may have been a good experience. It may have been a bad experience. But there was a place given to each of us where reflection was invited. It's hard to carve out space for it, right, in the way we live now.
Young people in particular are making the politics their religion, or work their religion, spin class, their church. What are you hearing?
The original report from Pew that coined this phrase, the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, it was still a very, very tiny percentage of people who said that they don't believe in anything. You know, we've had a huge inflow of young people into the media listening space that is On Being in recent years. And I experience that, especially among some of the people who call themselves nuns, there is a real spiritual curiosity. I would say a very passionate desire to be of service, which in my mind, I kind of liken the nuns to the early monastic movements, because the monastic movements were spiritual renewal movements around the edges of religion that they experienced to have grown cold and to have grown distance from the deepest reasons it had come into being. And so I even see, you know, that people who don't identify explicitly with traditions are calling themselves, and in some sense, the traditions back to really go back to their core.
Interesting. One of the scientists at Yale, again, who found that the spiritual experience lives in the parietal cortex of our brain, they see it light up. They define a spiritual experience as being a robust state. You've spoken to so many scientists, neuroscientist Richard Davidson, botanist Robin Kimmerer. What do they say to you about spirituality?
The questions that the new technologies like brain imaging and just the way we're understanding the ecosystem of the natural world, for example, they are now illuminating our understanding of ourselves in a way that used to be reserved for theology. So I see scientists as really deep companions in these ancient, animating existential questions.
Einstein saw wonder and reverence for mystery.
they're so much more fearless about using the word mystery than most of the religious people I know.
Well, speaking of a religious person you know, one of those popular episodes you've done featured John O'Donohue. He was a former priest and spoke about beauty and nature as a way to access the spiritual.
Yeah.
And here, I just want to listen to a little. He's drawing on his childhood in County Clare, Ireland.
I often think that the forms of the limestone are so abstract and aesthetic, and it is as if they were all laid down by some wild, surrealistic kind of deity, like a huge, wild invitation to extend your imagination.
We're talking about stones there, mm-hmm. you know, and suddenly, you know, we're plunged.
I don't know if you know the work of Dacher Keltner at Berkeley. So he's really delving into the notion of awe. And not only is awe a real thing, awe is a life-giving, health-giving thing, which I think is fascinating. Awe would be a term that most of us would, I think, historically have associated with belief in God. But when I look at his research and how people describe the experience of awe, so much of it overwhelmingly is about an experience of being in the natural world. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting that we're getting in touch with that in the same moment that the natural world is changing, and something like weather that's been something of small talk that we've taken for granted is suddenly the stuff of the news.
And what about in this time in history when people want to hold on to their spirituality, which they may also define as their goodness, and yet they may be very, very angry at someone on the other side of the partisan divide? I'm thinking when you spoke with poet and playwright Claudia Rankine about race. She says, I spent a lot of time thinking about how can I say this so that we can stay in this car together and yet explore the things that I want to explore with you. What have you learned about bridging these divides?
We're kind of in this stuck in outrage, which is actually terrible for us, right? I mean, we've talked about awe a minute ago. It's the absolute opposite of that. Mm. And I'm sure they could demonstrate the terrible effects on our health and well-being. We're trained to fight and we're trained to wield our opinions. And you know, let's just not accept that these chasms are forever, right? Mm-hmm.
This is one of your projects. You get people to sit down and talk about their opposing views. We want to listen to a little. The topic is abortion. You ask each side what they don't like about their side. And let's start with anti-abortion activist David Gushee.
What the main activists in the pro-life or anti-abortion community want is an overturn of Roe versus Wade. I am not at all convinced that if that were to actually happen, that they would like the world that they would see, because I'm not sure that it would lead to fewer abortions. I think it might lead to more.
Then we hear from Frances Kissling. Now, she didn't like when the pro-choice side dismissed the fetus.
I think fetuses have value, and I don't think you can make the fetus invisible in the abortion decision. Mm-hmm. What I like about the position of people who are very strongly opposed to legal abortion is that side of that movement that really is troubled.
There are many, many callings for this time. And yes, there are people who are going to be on front lines of battling. And there's also room for some of us to be calmers of fear. Mm-hmm. And there's a room for some of us to be bridge people, to start widening that space in the middle between the poles that are in a battle that they can't get out of. Letting yourself take as seriously what you care about and what you love and what you want your children to be seeing, and factor that in to the equation of how you live in this moment. A spiritual move would be, can I get as clear and as passionate about what I love? And how do I work towards that, even in very subtle ways?
I want to hear just a little bit of another, you know, beloved episode of On Being. This is Brené Brown, research professor at the Grad School of Social Work at the University of Houston, and she's talking about the spirituality of relationships, how you can speak to other people when we've tucked ourselves into ideological boxes, which has caused a lot of loneliness.
When you are really struggling with someone, and it's someone you're supposed to hate because of ideology or belief, move in, get curious, get closer, ask questions, try to connect. Remind yourself of that spiritual belief of inextricable connection. How am I connected to you in a way that is bigger and more primal than our politics?
Krista Tippett?
The wise people I speak with will say, you know, We're in relationship with that person on the far side of whatever vexes us. Mm. And I think that that is the kind of challenging insight that the spiritual traditions invite us to. We are defined as much by how we treat our enemies as by how we treat our friends. Mm. That is working on us from the inside and shaping our character. And so really doing this hard, messy, uncomfortable work of figuring out how you're going to be humane in the presence of people who feel like enemies, and I'm not talking about people who are going to hurt you. That is work that is also about your soul. That's just a huge thing to chew on and kind of walk through a lifetime with.
Yeah. Darn it.
Exactly.
Krista Tippett, thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you.